Welcome to what is sure to be the shortest episode ever of Roger and Me, aka Roger Ebert and Me, a movie review podcast. That's the full search engine optimized title. But what does it all mean? What it means is Mark of MarkReviewsMovies.com, Mark Dusick, and I, Brett Arnold, of this podcast, the New Flesh podcast, a podcast about horror movies and all things tangentially related to horror and the horror lifestyle, and of the Twitter handle Brett Redacted. Me and Mark gather every, Wednesday night, Thursday night, or Friday morning, and record an episode. I'm getting really granular with this.
We set up our microphones. We turn on our cameras.
I should keep it. This is fun. This is what people
want.
We sit down.
Yeah. We sit down in our seats.
I create the room called StreamYard, and I invite Mark, and then we gather together. The aforementioned Mark of MarkReviewsMovies.com. I'm going to keep getting the plugs in there. We have to vamp today, so I'm going to keep just throwing stuff in there. It's called Roger Ebert and Me because we are a show that is modeled after, it's a tribute to, it's an imitation of Siskel and Ebert, which was, if you really think about it, the first movie review podcast before anybody even knew what podcasting was. Gene Siskel, Roger Ebert talked about every movie that came out every Friday, and they reviewed them in short form in easily digestible little bursts, quick bites, if you will. And that's what Mark and I are doing here. We are talking about every movie that comes out every Friday. We are reviewing them and telling you whether they are worth seeing in theaters, worth waiting for at home, worth skipping entirely. And we hope to do it with pizzazz and personality. Usually we do, 9 movies, sometimes 10, 11. That feels more often what happens than the more middling 6 or 7s. But this week, Mark, I don't know what happened. It's the beginning of summer. Technically, maybe summer hasn't started, but the summer movie season starts in, May, whenever the first Marvel comes out. Guardians of the Galaxy 3, I think, kicked off this year's summer movie season. So the summer movie season's in full swing, and yet it's June 23rd. This episode is for Friday, June 23rd, and there's 3 movies we're talking about, and only one of them is, for lack of a better term, real. There is No Hard Feelings, an R-rated, marketed as very raunchy rom-com starring Jennifer Lawrence. That's the big release this week. And then we have God is a Bullet, a movie with an impressive cast. We'll talk about it, but it doesn't exist. Why is that? We'll also tell you why that is. It's very obvious. And then there's a movie called, pardon my French, literally, Revoir Paris, I believe, which means Memories of Paris or Paris Memories. It is a movie that stars my girl Benedetta from the Paul Verhoeven film Benedetta, a.k.a. Virginie Elfera, I believe is her name. She's been in, we've reviewed at least 2 other movies starring her, I believe.
We have. And this year, I think it's at least been 2 so far. I think she has another one coming out pretty soon, too.
Keeps
so
cropping up in things, and I'm always delighted to see her. And I was that feeling is, still works with this movie that we'll talk about. What do you need to say, Mark, before we get into our very busy schedule of 3 movies?
Yeah, very, very busy. I think it's just because Indy comes out next week. We've both seen Indiana Jones and Dial Destiny. We will definitely be covering that next week. But I think, I think that's it, because there's like a week and a half of Indiana Jones and then Mission Impossible comes out. So this is just slow week when nothing big got scheduled because no one wanted to put something a week before Indiana Jones, I'm assuming.
And it's particularly galling because last week we had 2 big releases. We had Elemental and The Flash, which both bombed monumentally, we can now say, after last week's episode, which I'm sure we recorded before all that happened. So it's just like, there's not even like, what are you leading runway for? Like, The Flash isn't gonna do anything in weekend 2. And so now basically the box office is Spider-Verse is probably gonna be number 1 this weekend again. Which I saw, I don't know if you pay attention to the daily box office, but yesterday on Wednesday of last week, or of this week, Spider-Man took over number 1 again. It beat Elemental, which Elemental beat The Flash in daily money, You know, it's a matter of like 3 million versus 3.5 versus 3.8, but it's still significant to see how badly the Flash is doing. That's neither here nor there. That's all there is to say. It's a strange week. There's only three things to talk about. There's another movie that Mark watched that's only playing at a couple showtimes in LA. So we'll talk about that one next week. What is that one called?
Love Gets a Room. It's also in other, it's like, I think it's Miami. It's like in strange markets. Minneapolis might have it. But fantastic. It gets a digital release next week. So hopefully we'll get around to that one with everything.
Yes, I do want to watch it. It looks interesting. It's from the guy who made the movie Buried, that Ryan Reynolds, like all one location coffin movie. I'm fascinated by the premise. Is it a musical? Is that correct?
Partially.
Interesting.
I'll let you experience it.
Okay, cool. And for those people who live in Miami and Minneapolis and
and
who
LA.
Are available at 4:30 to see, it's only one show a day in LA at 4:30. If you can make it, see Love Gets a Room, and we'll talk about it next week. And there's a documentary out this week that I just didn't care to get to because basically for documentaries, because I have so many other things to watch, I need Mark to give me the thumbs up if it's good or not. And he basically was like, it's fine. And that wasn't enough to move the needle.
Yeah.
That is called The Last Rider. It is reviewed on markreviewsmovies.com. It's about some dude who won the Tour de France or something like that.
Greg LeMond. He is officially the only American to have ever won the Tour de France.
Because of nothing. I'm ignorant. Lance Armstrong. I could have stood to watch this. Yeah.
Yeah. Lance Armstrong had all of his victories revoked after the doping
scandal. Oh, that's right.
So he is officially, Greg LeMond is the only American to have ever won that. So it's okay. I get into detail in my review about why I think it's more interesting as a biography, but the movie doesn't lean into that. It's more about covering his big race. Anyway, it's strange. I wish they had spent a bit more time with him and not so much covering that monumental race in his life. It's got a fairly decent release too if you're interested in cycling or in people overcoming challenges to accomplish great things.
It
does give you that good feeling at least.
Yes, there's definitely a contingent of people, the bike heads. They exist.
Yeah,
and they're loud and proud, and they will like this movie, I'm sure. So check out The Last Rider. Is that what's called?
The Last Rider. Yeah,
The Last Rider. All right, and then without further ado, I will note that Asteroid City, which you reviewed either last week or the week before that, is now wider than it was when we talked about it. So wanted to give a shout out to Asteroid City, the new Wes Anderson, as I quite liked it. And Mark also liked it, but I really liked it. And I haven't liked Wes Anderson. So I feel like I have to give him that respectful bump. All right, let's talk about No Hard Feelings. Here's the Red Band trailer. So, you know, if you got kids in the room, you want to usher them out because this is R-rated.
I'm an Uber driver and I don't have a car. I'm going to lose my house.
You think I chose this?
Look at this.
Need a car, date our son this summer, and bring him out of his shell before college.
In exchange, we'll give you a Buick Regal. Date is in quotes.
It's got to be a joke, right?
No, have you seen these helicopter parents? I'm surprised they're not going to fuck them themselves.
We've just been so worried about our son.
He's going to Princeton in the fall.
No, I've heard of it. You know, we tried everything to bring him out of his shell.
He doesn't come out of his room. He doesn't talk to girls. He doesn't drink.
So when you say date him, do you mean date him or date him?
Yes.
Date him. Date him hard.
Okay. I'll date his brains out.
Well, there you have it. The premise is laid out. The movie is based on a true story in that it was a real life Craigslist post, I believe, that it's based on. Like, some parents did post that, or maybe someone posted it as a joke. There's no real way to, I don't think there's actually a story behind it like there is in this movie. It was definitely a jumping off point type of premise. But I was really excited for this, Mark, because I love a good R-rated raunchy comedy. I don't know if it's like the raunch that does it for me or in particular, but like just the fact I just miss comedies. I think I don't even think it has anything to do with the fact that it's R-rated raunch. Like, one of the best romantic comedies in however long it's been, Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Right. That's not a particularly raunchy movie in my mind, but it's definitely an R-rated comedy. And I just miss those romantic comedies. Comedies for adults. Does this one live up to the expectations that I had for it? yes and no, right? Because I think it's much better than the recent spat of rom-coms we've gotten with A-list stars that are all like really bad action movies tacked onto them, like The Lost City and Shotgun Wedding. And there's definitely a third one that also, Ghosted, I think, is another one. Like, I'm sick. This movie is eons better than those, but it's definitely not like, you know, a Fairley Brothers masterpiece or an early Apatow type of hilarious. It just is pretty funny until it kind of becomes overwhelmed by the emotions of what it's trying to do in the third act and kind of becomes, as my buddy Jesse says, squishy by the end. And just stops trying to be funny and just kind of tries to be like this human, nice, sweet little movie. And I think it succeeds on its own merits as a funny, sweet movie. But as like the big raunchy comedy they're trying to sell it as, I think it does feel like those elements are the most try-hardy and like not where the movie is at its best. I'm rambling. Mark, what'd you think of this movie?
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat as you. My big problem with the turn, I appreciate movies that are, you know, have premises like this where it feels like, oh, this feels wrong in some way. Yes. And that's fine. And that's fine. Yeah. Play it for laughs. It's good. And that's what this movie does. But once it starts to, if it has like that element of the sweet relationship, what this one does, they become like friends essentially over the course of this. And you feel that because Jennifer Lawrence and his name escapes me.
Going to Harvard to be in this movie and, you know, hang out with Jennifer
Andrew Barth Feldman. He's clearly a talented young man. He's very funny here and gets to show off like some singing skills too, which is unexpected, but it's like, okay, this is a good showcase for what he can do as an actor.
And it's a good showcase for J-Law, who gets to be
horrific. She's incredibly funny in this. And that's what really works for me, is that she is playing this really, let's call her flawed character, and playing it up, and it's fine. I'm good with all that, and I'm fine with them becoming friends along the way. But you are exactly right. At a certain point, the movie just stops trying to be funny, and it tries to be sweet. And I felt as if it's trying to apologize for everything that was funny about it beforehand. The fact that this relationship does feel wrong, that her character is flawed, and there's a lot going on that she needs to address.
Oh, yeah. They can't let
for all that.
They can't let her character stay flawed. She has to have an arc.
Correct. And that, it really just feels like they're apologizing for everything that made this movie funny up until that point where they decide, let's make it about something more than just Jennifer Lawrence getting punched in the throat and Jennifer Lawrence having a nude fight scene on a beach, that kind of stuff.
A nude scene that is very digitally, like they put her face on some double's body. It is very awkwardly shot.
It's very clear. Because it's like pitch black at night and
it's
all
pitch
that
black
stuff is
cut together. The digital face keeps slipping if you're looking for it, but like,
it's still funny.
It's still funny. The scene works. Yeah. I don't think it takes you out of the scene at all. As I said on Letterboxd, it has the best nude fight scene since Eastern Promises. Even though I think that was a bit more practical. That was really Viggo's ding-a-ling swinging around in that one. But yeah, you know what? The thing about this movie is, I'm glad you mentioned the throat punch thing, because like, I couldn't tell if it was because I'd seen the trailer so many times, or even once would have done the trick. But like, is it the fact that like a lot of the bigger jokes are in the trailer that there aren't funny? Or is it the fact that the movie is trying to manufacture these big, I don't want to call them, they're not set pieces. They're definitely not. But like, they're big swing, gag, physical comedy jokes that feel at odds with when, like, the stuff that's actually funny in the movie isn't that stuff for me. Like, you know, she meets, Matthew Broderick. She meets Matthew Broderick, the dad of the kid, and his name is Laird. And she says, like, lasagna. Yes. And like, that's a huge laugh. That was like the first laugh, one of the first laughs in the movie. And I'm just like, she doesn't understand the name Laird. And she just keeps saying Laird, like lasagna. And he's like, no, Laird. And she's just like, I can't say it. And it's so stupid. It's silly little things like that that make the movie funny. And less so the part where she gets maced in the face or punched in the throat.
The setup to that joke is so funny, though, that you know, this whole like, I'm going to take you to this remote location.
Yes.
Like the fact that he thinks she's kidnapping him is really funny.
I agree. And then it's like topped off with like a cherry on top with the mace, and it's supposed to be so funny. And I can't tell if it like the mace didn't make me laugh as much as the buildup, because the trailer ruined it, or it was just kind of obvious of what was going to happen. Like, and it's just like
her writhing
around isn't as funny as the actual jokes that are written. Correct. In this
but there's movie. Also funnier stuff like I can't kidnap you. You're 19 years old or something like that.
Yeah.
That's a good line too. There's the bit she's like at the bottom of the stairs with her rollerblades because her car gets impounded or gets towed, and so she's at the bottom of the stairs on these rollerblades. Like, so do you want me to come up there or will you guys come down here? Like, no, you can come up here. And that's also a funny gag. And there's really funny stuff that's not just the big physical comedy. A lot of it revolves around the fact that Jennifer Lawrence is playing this completely deadpan straight. She's just this character who happens to be very funny. And that's
if she were
that's
a
what
man,
makes that work.
If she were a man in a movie, we'd say she was like a womanizer. Like, she's constantly fucking dudes. And it's not out of like the movie isn't being like, look at this slutty woman. It's being like, look at this woman who refuses to emotionally connect with anybody. And then like, again, all that stuff works for comedy. And then once it starts just going into overdrive on like, you know, making the movie about that and like two characters who need to like get out of their shells and like learn a lesson about life, like that's when it starts to feel a little just like not bad, just like safe and not as fun as it once was. And I think there is a really great generational comedy at play in this with like Gen Z versus millennial or whatever you want to see. And like, it's only mind that like one scene where she shows up at the party, I feel like is where they get all the jokes out about like kids these days trying to cancel you over saying racist things or.
Yeah.
The one I thought that was a little overbearing and silly. But then they did the joke about doesn't anybody fuck anymore? And like, that was funny.
Yeah, that was good because everyone's in the bedrooms, but they're all sitting on beds looking at their phones.
Yeah, like it's such an obvious joke, but it's funny. And like, it wouldn't have been fun. Like her saying, doesn't anyone fuck anymore, makes that funny. And like us, I think by virtue of this episode being very short, we're just ruining jokes from this movie now.
Sorry.
The trailer already ruins plenty of them, so I guess we should stop doing that. My point is, the movie's funny, and I think it's worth recommending, but like Mark gives it 2.5 stars out of 4 here. And it's one of those cases, Mark, where it's a 3 out of 5, easy. Easy 3 out of 5, no qualms, and that's the same score you give it when you do your little scaling up or whatever. But I think I'm going to go with the 3 out of 4 as a very, you know, cautious recommend with reservations. But, you know, if you're judging the movie based on like six, like, is it entertaining and funny and does it achieve what it sets out to do? I think it's successful at what it does, even if I disagree with the fact that how emotional I think it needs to be. I think it could have just been more of a straight comedy and I would have had a better time. Maybe it's just because it's missing that this last third act of jokes, but like it's very funny for 2/3 and then it's just kind of not.
I don't get it because it can clearly be funny and sweet at the same time because it is that for like that middle section of the movie when they are like dating but learning about each other. It is both funny and sweet, but then as soon as that third act hits, it's like, oh, forget the jokes, we got to go into serious mode now. It's so strange because the movie accomplishes exactly what it sets out to do right in that middle section. And that's probably the best section of the movie because it is both funny and sincere about the characters. And I don't know why they had to just drop the comedy. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So also I have my reservations, but I think it's worth recommending and worth seeing in a theater and worth supporting, even if it's not as uproariously funny as you might want it to be. It gets the job done more than these other recent ones. So I have to throw my support behind it, even if it's a little reluctant. All right. Now, there's a lot of reluctance on this one. Goddamn. God is a Bullet is the name of the movie. And I'm going to leave you to just, you know, sit with that and think about it for a second. Here's the trailer.
I think I know who took your daughter.
She was in a cult, for Christ's sake. You really think this person is trustworthy? I lost my wife. I lost my daughter.
Forget about the authorities tracking your daughter down. If you want her back, you got to get her yourself.
Where's my daughter?
She was alive 2 weeks ago.
If she had to go through what I did when they took me, it would be like nothing you can imagine.
You're up. You didn't say anything about tattoos.
Imagine if I showed up at your little church looking like this.
Really shouldn't be following us, man.
Stupid.
Now you're gonna show the ladies some respect.
They bring children here. In the end, they're killed. They keep some like me. No!
Let's send Cyrus a message.
I couldn't believe what I was watching, Mark, like, to start. And then once the Micah Monroe character enters, it started to click to me. And then once I saw it was, I checked and saw that it was based on a book. And I'm like, oh, I see 100% what happened here. This is the dumbest, trashiest, laziest, knockoff airport novel version of someone capitalizing on, like, the success of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. That's like straight up what this is to me. It's like her character is exactly like Lisbeth Salander, but there's also so many other movies it's trying to be. It's just any guy goes undercover to infiltrate a cult thing, but they're trying to do this. The cult's supposed to be like these Manson-esque, really scary, foreboding dudes with face tattoos and stuff. And it's all so over the top and that it becomes silly. And I feel like if you were adapting some trashy airport novel, knockoff Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Place Beyond the Pines, whatever the fuck this movie's doing, if you were adapting that with a sense of humor and making it silly, I feel like it could have been fun, especially with the level of violence that is in this movie. It has cartoonishly cartoonish, ridiculously gratuitous violence that I think, you know, I'm a horror guy. I always enjoy seeing that. But when it's in a movie that's so dour and serious like this, that's a movie about women getting raped and just brutalized, getting multiple women just get brutalized on screen, like in vicious beatdowns to the face, teeth falling out, just horrific stuff, all in the service of what? This fucking dumb movie that's a derivative of like 15 other movies. I was blown away at the ineptitude of this movie. And we should say it's by Nick Cassavetes, who is the son of the iconic filmmaker John Cassavetes and, you know, actress Gina Rowland. And also, you know, he's been directing for a long time. He had almost 20 years ago, he had a movie called Alpha Dog that was that his last, like, I wrote this and I'm an auteur and it's going to play at Sundance and hopefully people think that I'm a big deal. And then the movie just flops. And it was like this, you know, star-studded thing that no one really liked. And I feel like this guy, you know, he's done some studio jobs like The Other Woman, I think, in 2014. He's done some rant, like he's a workman-like guy who will direct a script and it's fine. But when he tries to be an auteur, I think he gets ahead of his skis. And this shit is like classic example of, you know, may have sounded good on paper, but like, oh, all the dialogue is so cringe and embarrassing. And I hope I have examples written down, but I'll let you speak now.
I'm shocked by this too, because it's
the Shane Black opening, Shane Black wannabe Christmas music over.
Oh yeah. The whole violence. Thing is set. Yeah. The whole beginning is set at Christmas, on Christmas Eve / morning. And Nicolaj Coster-Waldau's character finds his ex-wife and her new husband brutally murdered in their home because they didn't show up for the Christmas party. And then he has to go looking for his daughter who's been abducted by this satanic cult. And he's a cop. And it's so weird because the movie up front, like right near the beginning, right after his daughter's been abducted, and I wish I remember the time frame because it's so funny, because he's like, it's been 6 weeks or something very specific, like so that we know exactly how long it's been.
It's 6 weeks. And then the guy, his boss at the police station goes, you know, you're not a real cop. You're a desk cowboy. You're a seat warmer. Yeah,
you're not. He specifically, his boss specifically tells him, you are a bad investigator, and he is a police detective. And yeah. The rest of the movie seems to set out to prove just how bad he is at doing this, because his plan makes no sense. Like, I'm going to infiltrate the satanic cult. I'm going to look like I'm a member of the satanic cult that is very tight-knit, that everybody knows everybody. Everybody knows all this stuff. His plan, like, instantly fails, and then he keeps trying to do it. It's so...
I feel like...
None of it makes sense. It's... Yeah.
This was like a scary movie-style parody of tropes of movies like this. I think it has some juice. But as a real movie, it is astonishingly embarrassing, right?
Yeah, it is. And I really don't like the fact that you have this character played by Maika Monroe who escaped from this cult. She's a fascinating character.
I wanted to sneak her name in. You mean Case?
Oh yeah, go ahead. Case Harden. She's a hard case too.
Case Harden. Okay, go on. Sorry.
Yeah. There's Case Harden. There's also the whiny drug dealer Earl Grey. And that's not a pun. I don't know why his name's Earl Grey.
January Jones' character's name is Maureen Bacon. The main detective is Detective Bob Hightower. Most of these names you don't even hear in the movie, so I was delighted to read this afterwards. Ethan Suplee's character's name is Gutter. Jamie Foxx is the ferryman. Jamie Foxx with vitiligo.
Yeah, and lots of tattoos too, because he's a tattoo artist who does all the tattoos for the cult, but also is apparently like a good guy. I don't understand where his character fits in, because he seems to know everything about the cult and is willing to give out some information, but he's also really tightly knit with the cult. I don't understand where this is, because it's all just about the plot moving forward. That's really what it's all about.
I want to get across a point about how does this movie not feel like a 13-year-old? If you were to give like a 13-year-old The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and a few detective movies, and you're like, make something. I feel like this is what they would come up with, because like it really revels in all the like explosion. They're gonna have a fucking big explosion here, and then we're gonna have a woman get her face beaten to a bloody pulp, and we're gonna zoom in on it, and then we're gonna have another woman shot in the face 1,000 times to the point of her face is gone.
Oh god, I completely forgot about that part. I don't know how I forgot about that.
It has Terrifier 2 levels, or Terrifier 1 is also a fine thing to say. It has horror movie, the most gratuitous violent horror movie level of gore. And again, I'm not saying that as a negative inherently. I think in this movie, the way it's used, it's like it gets off on it. You know what I mean? It's like a movie that gets off on brutal rape and kidnapping. It's like gleeful about it. It can't wait to shotgun a person's head off. But like in realistic scenarios where a girl, you know, young girls are kidnapped and sold into sex trafficking. It's like, you know.
Or ritualistically slaughtered in a basement. That's the other implication.
It has that like conservative wish fulfillment, death wishy type thing going on with the bad guys, satanic panic bad guys.
Imagine if the satanic panic of the 80s was real. That's kind of the premise of this.
Exactly. And like, again, could be ripe for a cool movie, but it's just the movie itself is just feels like a mashup of a dozen other things. I was just blown away watching it. I'm like, this feels like this movie. This feels like that movie. And like, we haven't even mentioned, Mark, that it's 2 hours and 35 minutes long. It is the longest 2-hour, 35-minute movie I've ever seen, I think. It has zero drive to the narrative. It is completely lifeless and flat. There's no momentum. There is nothing bringing you from scene to scene. It is just flat, like scenes scattered together. I cannot believe this is, well, I can believe it's coming out, because is it coming out? Have you heard of this movie,
it is.
Listener?
Yeah, no.
Oh, really?
You have probably seen a trailer for it at some point.
Is it playing in like a decent amount of theaters? That is shocking. I haven't heard of it at all. Well, that is shocking, and I'm upset to hear that. People are going to be duped into watching this. But like, Nick Cassavetes, man, what's going on with this guy? Did you like Alpha Dog 20 years ago? Do you remember that?
I thought that one was okay. I remember that one because that one had like that was based on a real case that was still in court, I think, at the time. Yeah. And so it
felt
a little like,
allegedly, they say this is based on a true story, but I really a little quizzical head turn on that. Yeah. I don't know about that.
I mean,
that.
You said it. It's probably like based on Manson. That's all they say is like it's inspired by the Manson family and therefore it's based on a true story. I mean, that's where they're getting at now with a lot of these based on a true story things. There was that we didn't cover it, but I reviewed it last week or 2 weeks ago, but it was the Persian Lessons movie that they say that's based on a true story, but it's not. It's based on a short story by an author, and they're just using the context of the Holocaust to say it's based on a true story. Like there's there's a lot of juggling going on when they try to put that in because they think it makes it sound more important. But
yeah, this movie's frustrating though, Mark, because like an ultra violent movie that wants to be an exploitation movie, basically, it should work for me, but it's so amateurish in every way, especially dialogue. But like, I felt so bad, like watching actors, especially Micah, like she really commits to this character, but like this movie is just so fucking cringe and embarrassing. And like, it's just so funny to watch exploitation done so poorly that it veers into just completely edgelord bullshit. Like, ooh, offensive, huh? It like wants to have its cake and eat it too regarding like being a serious, thoughtful film, but it's insanely violent. But it's not. It's just a total piece of trash. And I love trash. So like, let me be clear that it's like, it's bad trash. It's the bad
kind. You have to own it. You have to own being trash. If you're going to be trashy, own it. This movie tries to stay away from being trash as much as it can, but it clearly is. I think
that's another
big issues.
Yeah. Remember when she's sitting in the dark and someone asks why? And I think she says, "I breathe better in the dark." That was a good line.
I missed that. I don't remember that.
Oh, I wrote that one down. I mean, there's so many lines that feel like they're ripped from like a really old Batman comic or something. Just like, again, it feels like a child wrote this. I just can't believe this is like someone's, you know, an adult man's passion project. It's very embarrassing. I'm going 1 star on God is a Bullet.
Okay. I guess I'm a slightly more generous 1.5. It's still really bad though.
Yeah. The reason it's not half or zero is because the ultra violence gets kind of inspired sometimes. That guy whose face, his jaw gets shot off.
Oh yeah, that's
and like before he's dead, he's like trying to like reassemble his own bottom half of his face. It's inspired to disgusting shit, and I just wish that it was in service of a movie that did anything that was compelling. It just is so lifeless. I cannot believe it. All right, we're gonna end on a high note here. In this episode that could have been an email. It's so short. Let's talk about Revoir Paris. Can't just say Revoir Paris. That's not how they would say it. Here's the trailer.
Qu'est-ce qui s'est passé après? Tout s'est effacé de ma mémoire.
Un appel de l'hôpital où tu étais blessé.
J'aimerais bien passer à autre chose. Même toi, tu me parles différemment. Comme s'il fallait faire attention à moi. C'est dans l'attentat. C'est super que tu sois venu.
Vous vous souvenez de moi?
Je ne me rappelle plus rien.
Vous avez de la chance.
Il y avait quelqu'un avec moi. Il m'a tenu la main.
On va s'en sortir.
Je veux savoir s'il est vivant.
C'est moi aussi, je cherchais la personne avec qui j'étais.
Et tu l'as vu, l'Australien?
Parfois, j'ai vraiment l'impression de les reconnaître dans la rue.
This movie, did it make me cry? I think it did. I think it got me there. Even if I think the third act gets maybe a little convenient with its like wrapping things up. But this is a very affecting and sad movie about a woman that survives a terrorist attack that, you know, it is what it is. It's definitely a terrorist attack. But to me, I mean, what would we call it in America? This is a mass shooting. She survived a mass shooting, something very, very common in America that, you know, probably it happens everywhere. This one happens in Paris, and she's at a restaurant. A guy comes in with a gun, kills tons and tons of people in front of her. And we kind of are in her perspective, right? Because it starts with her and she's at the restaurant, and then the attack starts to happen. We see some people die, and then it blacks out, right? And she, like, it happened, and then it's after. And the movie's kind of her trauma response, right? It's her, like, dealing with what happened, trying to understand what happened, because she blacked out and can't remember. Because, like, what the human body's response is to, like, black that shit out. Very affecting. Good performance from Virginie. You know, great lead performance. Central. She's in every scene. And I love the way that it incorporated, like, the ghosts and how she saw the people that she saw die and how they manifested in the real world to her. I found it very, you know, it's a very small scale and intimate thing, but I thought it worked. What about you?
Yeah, I found it very moving too, because it is this whole idea of needing to move on and also not being able to. And that's kind of where she's stuck in. She can't even remember what happened to be able to move on. And then she is surrounded by a world, a city that is saying, you know, this happened. We need to move past it and continue society. There's this really haunting scene of her watching this memorial being swept away. Just like this common, like, it's just they're cleaning the streets. That's all it is. But it's a memorial for all these people who died, because
it's
this isn't just
perfect this visual metaphor. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. But she's just still stuck there. So this is somewhat, I don't think it is directly dramatizing the 2015 coordinated attack, but it is implied that it is an attack similar to that one.
Yes.
And so it's not just at the restaurant. It's like all over the city. There were different attacks going on.
Yes.
But, you know, she's just stuck in this place, and no one can understand her except the people who went through it too. And the way that it portrays her relationships kind of becoming skewed, like the way that her friend will be like, I don't want to ask you about it, but, you know, I got to ask you about it. And she, like, she doesn't understand, like, I don't remember. And I, you know, there's nothing that, what else can I say about it? The way that the relationship with her husband becomes.
Yeah, no,
because
I love the honesty and rawness of this movie. Just being like, if you survive the terrorist attack, you might leave your husband because, like, your life is different now. He can't possibly understand. Like,
There's no way anyone can. Yeah,
there's just no way. And, like, he literally says at one point, like, God, I wish I was in the fucking attack with you so I could just have that connection to you. And, like, maybe the movie's a little reductive and convenient, as I said, with, I think they called it the diamond in the trauma aspect,
where it's like,
where it's like something good will come of it. And this movie, maybe, you know, is nice that it's this hopeful thing that, like, leads to a nice, happier ending for someone that says, like, out of something bad will come something good. But it's a little galling too at the same time. And, like, I don't want to think about it too hard because it's like, ooh, this is a little too sweet. Yeah.
I had that exact same reaction too, because it does, it throws that idea out there very early. Like, there's a support group at the restaurant where this one set, part of the attack happened. And the person who's running it says, you got to find the diamond in the trauma. And then the rest of the movie, in theory, is leading up to that point. And yeah, it is very simple.
Was there a minute where you thought, oh no, she's a ghost this whole time? Did you have that thought?
No, I didn't have that thought. I'm glad we did not play it.
I forget what it was, but there was a scene where it obviously fell apart after I thought about it for more than 2 seconds, but there was a scene, because, like, she talks to people throughout the movie, you know? Like, there was a scene that, like, implied something, and I'm like, oh my God. I really would have been blown away if they did that in a bad way.
Would have been awful.
It would have been very bad. But yeah, I love that the honesty, what I felt to be honest about the found family community that springs up in things like this, and how the victim's shared experience becomes so much stronger than any old relationship. And I think that's really interesting. And it was interesting to see it explored. And I think, there's, like, a better version of this movie that is about all these things we're talking about that just doesn't have, like, a I don't know. What is it? Too hopeful of an ending? Is that our critique? Like, it sounds like we're assholes.
I think it is.
It does feel wrong. Yeah,
it does. No, it does, because I think it just it simplifies things so clearly. Like, the answers she's looking for are, how do I move forward, and what happened to me? And as soon as those are answered by the movie, it's like, oh, that's it. That's the end of our movie now.
And like, and I appreciate. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I just didn't buy that as much as I bought everything else that's going on before.
Totally. I can appreciate the shared experience of victims being more important than old relationships, but there's also an implication that, like, well, she has to go marry a trauma victim now. Like, there's something about the way the movie treats it. Like, you better go find someone who also has scars. Like, I don't know. It was a little, just too simple. It really, really rang true up until the rushing to conclusions thing. But it really is strong, small, and powerful up until then, and affecting in like the small moments, and it felt very human. And you know what, I feel like this, I could very much see, like, not a straight like remake of this happening, but like an American movie about a school shooting with this type of framing. I think that actually does exist, with Jenna Ortega, and it was on Netflix, and it was pretty good, actually. I forget what that one's called, but I'm rambling again. We got to end this 45 minute episode. I'm going to go with the 3, a respectful 3.
Yep. 3 for me as well. Yep.
Yeah. Like, that ending we talked about being an issue, it doesn't drag it down to the point of us going like 2.5. No, like, it's still a good movie. No. It just,
no,
it's, you can, just, you can see this, you can see the strings of what it's doing, and you're like,
exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
It's exploring so much, deep trauma and the effects of that, for it to just come up with this simple answer by the end. That's the main problem with it. It's still moving though. By the end, I still found that you know, that last scene very moving, even though I'm like, yeah, but it's trying to get me there, but it still works. But oh well.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you have it. That's the week of June 23rd. We'll be back next week with Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. I will not reveal what we think about it, unless you subscribe to my letterbox, you can probably find it there. But Mark's review, you haven't reviewed it yet.
My Patreon.
It's up on Patreon.
Will be, depending on when we run this episode, it will more than likely be up if you're listening to this.
I'll be checking my inbox frequently. That's where if you subscribe to Mark's Patreon, you get the reviews right to your inbox. It's a great delivery system. I highly recommend it.
And early too.
And early too. There you have it. Bye.
The show starts in one. We seem
Jordan Sars. Shut up. Hush.